Welcome to our podcast. We're going behind the iconic blue signs of North Mississippi Health Services to connect you with important resources, hot topics, and information offered by our very own experts. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to check out Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Castos for more episodes.
Hey everybody, welcome to part two of our episode. This is the continuation on from last week. We're going to be finishing up the good versus bad of AI, and we're excited to have you back with us. Thank you guys so much.
So now we're going to switch gears and go over to the happy side, some positives, hopefully, that you'll find with artificial intelligence. And one of the big one that we hear is just a reduction in human errors. You know, even with that and repetitive tasks, they're more likely to make mistakes and make errors, where humans, unfortunately, do make mistakes and simple errors on a daily basis with repetitive things or things that we already know, we just forgot for a second or anything like that. And so having that in manufacturing can really help streamline automation and streamline things so that humans can move on to something else and something better.
That's fair. I mean, my only thing about that is that not everybody has that mindset to move on to something better. But guess what that is? Human error, not AI's. It's not AI's problem. It didn't wake up to solve that today. But, I get the whole, you know, perform repetitive and mundane tasks thing. There is certainly some advantages to where I think there's going to be some industries that are going to thrive on that, mm-hmm. With minimal job displacement. So, just trying to think about what that's going to look like for people. And hopefully, if it doesn't happen too fast, society and the job market will naturally open up jobs. Like, you'll lose some jobs in these mundane, repetitive, you know, factory-type tasks. But it should also open jobs for the maintenance of this AI, for the maintenance of equipment, for, you know, like you said, detecting things early or detecting safety hazards in a factory or whatever. As long as AI doesn't have developed too fast in terms of like how it's going to be used in actual jobs and actual companies, I think there will be a nice shift. Obviously, I could be wrong about this. I've made lots of wrong statements before in my life. You should see how my life looks. But I don't know. I think it that's going to be one of those things that's going to kind of toe a line, and we're just going to have to see how it turns out. But it's all going to be in how we, as in society, implement it.
Yeah, I definitely think this one is more from a business standpoint, AI is good for reduction in human error and to perform repetitive tasks, you know, because that helps with welding, you know, manufacturing. It helps with welding and painting and packaging and accuracy and speed and, you know, that reduces costs and improves efficiency. And to me, that doesn't matter because I don't own the business, but to, you know, a car company, that's what they need, is to be able to pump out more cars quicker or whatever you may have.
See, I don't know. I mean, besides the great toilet paper shortage of 2020 that wasn't even real, I mean, I'm kind of thinking about this not from a more productive standpoint in terms of like more output, because we don't really have a shortage of anything, to my knowledge. I know there was a whole legitimate car chip shortage, you know, stemming from the pandemic. But I don't know. I guess I was thinking about this more in terms of, like, safety, like human safety. Mm-hmm. You know, if Cooper Tire is down, or Goodyear Cooper Tire is down the road from us, you know, all those machines have safety mechanisms as they're making tires and cooking everything up and whatever. But, you know, think about AI. Okay, more of the machine is working, like it's taking on more of the work in general. But also there should be more safety in place in terms of, you know, doing these mundane tasks. Because if you're doing something all day, every day, and you're just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, you become absent-minded. Mm-hmm. So, like, even if we didn't replace the human, we could at least replace the systems he's interacting with. Like, I would be fine with that. Maybe if the human makes a mistake, the machine has a backup that catches that and fixes it, you know, later down in the process. I don't know. I don't think everything's going to be displacement of mundane, repetitive tasks, but there will be some of that, but I would like to think of it as more like a tool to aid instead of take over.
I definitely agree with that because, you know, just the reduction in human error, we use AI in robotic surgery systems every day.
Correct.
You know, we can perform complex procedures with more precision, accuracy. There's study shows that, you know, with certain types of robotic surgery that can also cut down on how much time you'll be out of work or just how much time you need to recover because it is minimally invasive, just because they make smaller incisions or whatever it is that they need to do. But there's less errors when it comes to robotic surgery.
Have you seen the new laser eye thing we've been promoting, like the new laser eye surgeries for like cataracts and low level astigmatism? I got to watch the video of like how it's a laser machine, but I know, same. I can't.
Final Destination? That
I know.
No.
I know.
No.
But like watching this machine, I was like, okay, the big thing is the laser, because do you know that whenever they do cataract surgery, people have been doing that by hand. That ain't happening. In no realm. I will be blind before I let somebody do that to me, okay? But like, you know, you're talking about healthcare could improve with this. Yeah, that's a very sensitive situation. You're just trying to cut the bare minimum little bit off the top of somebody's eye to replace a lens, mm-hmm. or to place a lens in. I feel, because I've worked with lasers, more of a visual design type thing, the accuracy and precision of those things, I would trust them. If I go in to do a cataract surgery in a few years, or not a cataract, I have astigmatism. If I go in to do astigmatism surgery in a few years, the only thing I'm worried about with that laser is, did the doctor put my stuff in correctly? Did it mm-hmm. tell the machine my stuff right? Because as long as I don't move, that machine is going to do what it's going to do. Mm-hmm. But I would also like to think that it has safety features, that if I accidentally jerked my head in a little bit too much, it would stop. And I'd just be sitting there hanging with like half my eyeball cut open. It's fine. It's all fine. The machines will fix it. So repetitive mundane tasks and jobs in a variety of industries, that's all good. What's our next one?
So one that I have is titled Zero Risk, even though that's not what that means. But I think the gist of it is that we are able to have artificial intelligent robots that take the place of us in situations that the risk is high, and the robots can do what we need them to do. So let's take, for example, to defusing a bomb. One thing that I did in college was I took a Citizens Police Academy. It went over 6 weeks. I highly recommend if that's something that's local to you, because we were able to see all of the different departments of the police department and see what they do and, you know, where your tax dollars is going and stuff like that. And we got to meet the bomb squad and to meet and see that robot in action was very impressive. They had like a very small homemade type bomb that they train with. And it was very interesting to see it, you know, roll across the yard, because we were outside, and it was able to defuse a bomb and put the can inside its little housed apartment. And then you watch it just poof, and it diffused. Now, obviously on a bigger scale, it would work out differently, but just imagine if there were lives at stake and it made more sense to send a robot to go do that than a human. Just like we see with, you know, you can also send robots to do ocean explorations, because we see how well that went a few months ago.
Oh, I need the ocean exploration. I got to also be controlled by a PlayStation controller. Like, that's just, that made my life. But yes, those guys could absolutely have been saved by AI.
I think they were less worried about AI and they wanted to go do it themselves. But I do agree.
They went down there in like basically a trash can with a window on the front of it. And with a PlayStation controller is the thing. It's very sad what happened. It really, truly is. But come on. Yes, AI could have absolutely allowed us to see that. Honestly, AI, a factory, fully AI, could take an exact replica of the Titanic and remake it today.
But it's not as fun because it's not in the ocean.
I just want to know, did they find Jack Dawson down there with it before, you know, the bad stuff happened?
I don't think so.
No heart of the ocean?
I don't think so.
They didn't report that? Okay. Yeah.
They didn't get far enough.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that. It really is a sad situation, but Lindsay is correct. AI could have saved them all this time. So, but yeah, I do like, I didn't think about the whole, you know, like you were saying, the diffusing bombs and things like that. Ooh, speaking of police. So what do we think about AI dogs? Which I know they kind of have like a semi-working model of something like that now. Like it's four-legged, it walks around, it does things.
That thing scares me.
It kind of terrifies me too. It reminds me of like an alien, like a real alien. But think about like a hostage situation. You let loose like six of those guys. Now here's the trick. It could, you know, end a hostage situation by taking out the violent party. But if you, the trick is, how do you ID that violent party for those robots to go in a building and find them and not hurt any other, you know, people who may have been taken hostage with them?
You know, I think that one's kind of hard because they run that risk with dog, just regular dogs. I mean, I've seen plenty of videos where they attack the wrong person. Now, I think sometimes it's very apparent who the aggressor is just because of their demeanor, and that's what they go towards. But, I mean, yeah, we run that risk all the time with regular dogs.
That's a fair point. But, yeah, I didn't think about law enforcement. I mean, we're just going to take it down to the local level. I'm not even going to go national. But law enforcement, that could be really beneficial to them in some ways. It could be used to predict behavior. You know, after you've had enough case studies to give the machine to learn. Yeah, it could. I mean, will it be accurate 100% of the time? No. Especially after criminals figure out, hey, they are using this to predict my move, so I just have to be unpredictable, move in unpredictable ways, and just like jump to the left real quick. Because the machine would never know.
Never know. Now you see me, now you don't.
There you go.
But, you know, we also see them, you know, in space. We've sent robots to different planets that we've explored. So we've seen that for a while. And I'm sure they're just getting better and better. Or have we?
Have we sent one into a black hole yet? That's what I want to know. So you're right about that. And, you know, I mentioned keeping that at a local level, just thinking about that at a local level instead of a national security type level for law enforcement. But one big advantage is scalability in almost any industry. I'm not saying it happens immediately, but it happens a whole lot faster than humans can do, like take a process and scale up. And as well as adaptability. So like I, you know, if I have my friend Joe who owns a business that's similar to mine, but not quite, maybe he's used AI to perfect a process in his making his product. Okay, my process is similar, but we make an entirely different product. I can just say, hey, how did you do this? And adapt it super fast. And now I've scaled up my production. If Joe isn't super, you know, stingy about his AI. So, but yeah, scalability from, and it could be used from a very small scale to like you were saying, daily life things, household things. All the way up to, you know, national security or, but yeah, I mean, scalability is a pretty big thing. And I mean, in terms of time, I mean, like you've already said a couple of times, it's 24/7. So.
Yeah. You know, with 24/7, that is a big advantage because on certain websites, if you go for help, you know, we have customer service lines that they only work 8 hours a day. And so they're open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. like a regular business day. But if you go on certain websites, you'll see that little chat box at the bottom or a little question mark that you can click on and it can try to do basic troubleshooting or...
Oh, yeah, I've seen the box.
You call a phone number and it tries to walk you through the automated system.
Speak to representative.
That's what I say. I was going to make a disclaimer that it's not the best, but you can make a case that for basic necessities or basic things, you know, as simple as making an automated payment. You know, if you can't call to make a payment to somebody during a regular day, you can call after hours and make a payment through their automated system and you're good to go. Your bill is paid. You didn't even have to talk to anybody awkwardly and feel the silence.
That's fair. I mean, I pay everything online, but I understand that there are people who do things like that. So that's totally a fair point. Me as a person, there's times where I've asked those chatbots questions and like 95% of the time, it's not helpful. Like yeah. They give me an answer this time. But the few times that it is, I still click, no, it wasn't helpful, just to get me a real person.
I do the exact same thing.
Yeah. We're not bad people, I swear. We're just not AI. We're not perfect. So... but yeah, you're totally right about that. I mean, there are some advantages. I just don't think we've gotten to a point where, you know, in those situations that an average person would interact with, I just don't think they're super helpful yet. But they'll get there.
Well, you could make an argument that we use AI on a daily basis. But I mean, that's one of the advantages is just the daily applications that we use, you know, Alexa, Siri, Google Maps, you know, that is all AI. Mm-hmm. And we use those on a daily basis and we don't attribute it to that.
That's fair. I mean, that's a fair point.
You know, we back then about, you know, however 15, 20 years ago, we used to have to print out instructions on MapQuest and hope that we didn't miss the, you know, the wrong turn or anything like that. But now we just have Siri yell at us in 0.2 miles, we got to turn and we're all the way in the opposite lane and we got to get over.
Yeah, that's true. And I will say the MapQuest directions though, if you were driving by yourself and you got pulled over, you could just say, yo, my bad, I was looking at my MapQuest directions and I got out of like 3 tickets like that. So AI can't do that for me. AI would give me the ticket before I even knew I'd done anything wrong.
That's fair.
See? Because that cop felt bad for me. I was like, oh, there's a construction zone here.
You have my all bad. These papers.
I was like, you know, my instructions didn't say anything about this. So I think I'm going in the wrong way. And he's like, no, you're heading right straight ahead. Go about 10 miles. I'm like, oh, thank you, officer. I'll slow down. But I didn't have to pay a ticket in Florence, Alabama.
But you see, now AI does help us to realize there is construction, maybe you should take a different way.
It does. Actually, man, I saw a really, really cool thing where this guy, just as an experiment, over, you know, 6 months or so, this is how humans can confuse AI. Over several months, he bought tons of old phones, which we're not going to talk about the safety of that anyway, because he had hundreds of people's old cell phones he could have gotten into. But anyway, he put them all in a red wagon, just a normal child's red wagon, and turned them all on and carried them across a bridge. Mm-hmm. And made like pulled them in the wagon across like a down a road across a bridge. He tricked Google into thinking that there was a traffic jam there. Mm-hmm. So it started rerouting people on different routes. Like, that is nuts. You tricked Google's, first of all, Google's AI that's navigating people every day. You tricked it with a red wagon and 100 phones. What?
I did read that the other day. I thought that was very funny.
That was so cool. Like, I mean, granted, I think there's so many much better uses of somebody's time, but that's neat.
He didn't want all the traffic coming through.
I think a better use would be if you took all those 100 phones, put them in your car when you're going somewhere, and everywhere you are, there's a traffic jam, so the road around you is always clear because it's rerouting people.
I don't think that's how that works.
I'll throw a red wagon in the trunk.
Okay, well, tell me how it goes. I don't think it's going to work the way you think it is.
it worked for the guy.
He also was walking at a snail's pace. He wasn't going 30, 40, 50 miles an hour down the road where the traffic jam is constantly moving.
That's a fair
and
point.
And it's in the present, like where he, the map, he's going slow enough.
That it looks like there's traffic.
Correct.
That's a good point. My machine learning wasn't updated. Sorry, I didn't think about it before I threw that idea out there. Anyway.
One of the other things, though, that that I found funny just because of what I attribute it to is that AI makes, to a certain extent, you can make an argument, but it makes unbiased decisions depending on the situation that it is in. Let's preface that. But I don't make unbiased decisions. Sometimes I can't even decide what I want to eat. And depending on my mood, decides other decisions. So I'm biased all the time. So if you plug into AI and give it X, Y, and Z and give them parameters or, you know, things to choose by, it's going to choose based off of what you're asking of it. In that example, you know, we can go down a rabbit trail.
We can,
how
because
it
I'm
could be biased.
I'm thinking of like, what information did you feed it?
Right.
But a very small scale example of that, whenever you're trying to decide this, that, or do we go here, do we go there, and you've got two or three people, just tell everybody to pick a number, and then after they tell you their number, say, Siri, pick a number between 1 and 50. It will automatically do it. Love it. Like, that's my very small scale example.
Normally, if we can get it down to 2, then we just have her flip a coin.
That's fair. That's okay. I know last time we were in here recording with you and Nicholas, I mentioned getting a magic 8-ball for who's going to start, who's not going to start, you know, all that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an app for that. I want a physical magical 8-ball.
Yeah, that it does feel better with the 8-ball.
Yeah, it's just like, I love the shake.
I shake my phone anyways all the time, so I'd rather just shake the 8-ball with purpose, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like things with purpose.
But I think this unbiased decision in this regard is talking about, you know, machine learning if-then statements.
Yeah.
It's taking, if this is what happens, then this is the answer. If this is what happens, then this is the answer. And it there's no emotion in it. It's if-then.
Okay. So let me ask you this, since you're more in this world. There are some things that you, at questions that are asked every day that are solely opinion-based. There's no fact, there's no reason behind them. They're just, you know, whatever. So if you ask a machine this, choose this or this, how does it make what we would consider a purely opinion-based decision? Like, you're talking about if-then statements. I understand how those work. We're not going to go into that for this. But even understanding how those works, those are still absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think AI handles something that isn't an absolute?
So I have actually done this before, and it pulled information from other places.
Okay, cool.
So I've asked it something like, what's the best restaurant around? That's not something it would know.
Right.
So instead, it pulls information and says, well, based off of Yelp, these are 4.3 stars.
So the AI went to humans for help.
Or
now we're full circle.
Or bots that are putting in 5 stars. Didn't see that one coming.
I didn't see that one coming. So, I mean, yeah, I guess that's fair. I mean, granted, it is going back to us, but us and or bots. But I do like that answer. I hadn't really thought about how it circumvents its absolute statements that it goes by all the time to solve anything. And I guess, do you think that's why most people think of this as artificial intelligence that's, like you said, been around a really long time, but do you think the fact that now it's circumventing the rest of the internet into these, you know? Like, do you think that's what people consider artificial intelligence, that it has the ability to go out and gather its own information?
Yes. I think people, and this was the whole reason why we wanted to start with this series, is because I don't think that a lot of listeners understood how AI has been in our lives, you know, as much as it has. But now, because it's coming full circle and it's pulling from information that we fed it, that now people are wanting to take note and have cause for concern. So I kind of want to wrap this up just bringing it back to how we see the good in medical applications when it comes to AI. It's made significant contributions to the field of medicine with applications ranging from diagnosis and treatment to drug discovery and clinical trials. AI-powered tools can help doctors and researchers analyze patient data, identify potential health risk, and also developing personalized treatment plans, which can help to better health outcomes for patients and help accelerate, you know, the development of new medical treatments and technologies. For instance, recent advances in AI-based technologies allow doctors to detect breast cancer in a woman at an earlier stage. It is exciting in the field of breast cancer, but it, you know, it's still a work in progress. Studies show that using AI in breast cancer screenings can be associated with false positive rates, obviously. And if you're not aware what a false positive rate is, it's basically just a wrong reading. The AI system thinks it sees something, and when a human goes back and looks at it, that says that's not correct. So machine learning is very good for what you've taught it. Machines, when they see something that they have no experience with, they're not very good at identifying it, which is why we always have to keep updating that information with AI to feed the new information so they know this is what I'm looking for, this isn't what I'm looking for. So far, studies show that AI technology is used best alongside with humans. One recent study found that humans and AI working together are capable of detecting 2.6 more breast cancers with fewer false alarms and false positives. So I think that's something kind of positive to end on, is that we're not looking for technology to completely, or at least in the medical world, that's all I'll speak for, especially on this study that I found. But when AI and humans work together, it's helping us with early detection, it's helping with diagnosis, it's helping so much more than if one alone was working. If we just relied on the AI, you know, like we saw, there could be higher false positive rates. And with humans as well, you know, humans miss readings all the time. So I think that's something kind of positive to look forward to and end out this episode, that we're making big strides as long as we're working together with AI.
I agree with you. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some negatives to come up, but like the few examples I've heard about, discussed in our organization in general, I've heard a lot of advantages. And again, with humans, you got to make sure, you know, what you're doing is correct. But yeah, I really, really do see a lot of improved healthcare in the next 10 years once we kind of figure out how to, you know, take AI and apply it to what we're doing, us and other healthcare organizations throughout the world. I'll be honest with you, I almost think there's going to be like a little race in our field. I'm sure there's going to be many races with AI, but in our field in general, I think it's going to be a race to see, you know, who can cure this first, who can ID this particular cancer, this particular disease first, like the earliest, I guess is the best way to say it, not first. And then, you know, of course, after you make a great stride like that, the next thing everybody looks at is, okay, peer review. How did you get there? Was this a fluke? Like, you found it, the thing, you know, the disease, the whatever. But did you mean to? And did you do it correctly? Like, can we repeat this process in other cases? So once you have all that, and believe me, medical people totally only live off of facts. They rely very heavily on case studies and facts. And thank God, because there have been amazing medical advancements made by doctors and machines. You know, going off of all this stuff. So I'm really excited to see, like, it's one thing, okay, racing to get to the moon, like, you know, back in the Cold War days, like, that was fine. But what practical are you? I can't get to the moon.
You can. You have a green screen.
I can, I guess. I mean, but what I'm saying is, like, I want to see people being like, dude, at my hospital, we found Lou Gehrig's disease in like a 2-year-old, and he's not going to kick in until he's like in his 60s. We can figure this out now. Like, that is crazy. And there will be some patient ethics stuff, like, okay, when do you say something to a patient about XYZ and how do you present it? You know, but that'll just be, I mean, I'm going to say, I don't do patient care, but that's a big discussion now is, you know, how to present things, and has been for a long time as people have changed, technology's changed, and methods have changed. But I think it's going to be really good to see people racing to see who can do the most good first. I think that's going to be fantastic.
I think this last statement could be controversial, but I'm going to say it.
It is.
I think that a lot of patient data that we're collecting and keeping we need to keep safe for obvious reasons, but I think will help AI just in the future to hopefully for early detection. Mm-hmm. You know, if you see we have generations of your family and they all had this one marker, but it showed present in you, or, right. You know, or it was expressed, or however you want to say that. And so I think that hopefully we can see advances for a lot of early detections, just from past information that's been collected over time, mm-hmm. of generations, you know?
That's a pretty valid point. Well, okay.
I think that's all we have, so we will see you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ms. Lindsay, again, for passing on all your knowledge and all your wisdoms and your AIs. and we will be back next week. I will probably not be behind the microphone if God is smiling on me. And I think we'll have Nicholas back for the next one, but in case we don't, somebody will be here, and we're going to continue this AI discussion as we move forward through this. So, bye guys.
See ya.
Thank you for listening. We are here to support you and are so glad you chose to spend time with us today. We hope this podcast helps you understand what connected feels like. Please don't forget to check back at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Castos for more episodes.